Welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. You've got Logan Jones here. And for today's episode, we're releasing something a little bit different. We are releasing a live panel discussion that we recorded last Tuesday for the SOAR Summit in Corbin, Kentucky. So I got to moderate a panel with Lincoln Brown, Jeff Marietta, Sabrina McWhorter, and JP Blevins. And we got to discuss the state of entrepreneurship and innovation, not only in Kentucky, but in Eastern Kentucky specifically. And so one of the major themes that we really dove into was the differences between small business entrepreneurship and high growth startup entrepreneurship, and how we as a state should approach and support those two different types of entrepreneurship. So it was a great conversation. I had a blast moderating this panel. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it. I think this is a conversation that's very important for us as a state to pull a lot of different themes and learnings from. So definitely let us know what you think of this episode. Before we dive into it, we just want to get a word from our sponsors. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website, and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
Thanks again for everyone joining here. I'm excited to be hosting this panel. I'm really excited about the panelists we have on this panel. We have some really awesome entrepreneurs from the state of Kentucky. And this panel is going to be all around talking about the state of innovation and entrepreneurship in Kentucky and in Eastern Kentucky specifically. And what I really want to spend a lot of this conversation breaking down are the differences between small business entrepreneurship and the differences between high growth startup entrepreneurship. Obviously very different things, but both play a huge role in our entrepreneurial ecosystem here in the state. And I think it's just important to really talk about those differences and understand them from a realist standpoint. So that being said, I do want to start by just thanking SOAR for putting on this entire event, having me come down here and talk to these awesome people. And I want to take some time to introduce each of our panelists. They're going to be able to talk about their backgrounds a little bit better than I will. So I'll let them talk about that briefly here in just a second. But starting down the line here, we have Lincoln Brown, Jeff Marietta, Sabrina, I'm sorry, McWhort, I'm sorry, I was going to butcher that. And then JP Blevins. And I want you guys to just kind of start with your backgrounds here. And we're going to go over, you know, how you got to where you are briefly, high level, and how the state of Kentucky and Eastern Kentucky plays into that. So Lincoln, we'll start with you and we'll go down the line.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. You want like the 30-second version here?
Yeah, just high level, if somebody has met you for the first time and they're like, you know, what do you do? How'd you get here? Kind of thing. 30-second to a minute would be perfect.
You got it. So I've been in technology now for the last 15, 18 years as an entrepreneur. I've had a few successes and a couple that didn't go so well, especially early on when I didn't know what I was doing, and progressively have had a bit more success and been blessed, and mostly focus on purposeful companies that can really have a double bottom line to help with social impact as well as building a company. Right now, I'm hyper-focused on building a company called KidStrong. We just opened our 100th location, started in Lexington, Kentucky as a small business, and really small business in 1,800 square feet, and now it's really kind of taken a life of its own. And I've got, a lot of, I think I've traversed both the big company side and the small business side. And I moved back to home a few years ago and really been trying to focus on ways to give back. And Eastern Kentucky, has become near and dear to my heart. I'm spending a lot of time here now, and we'll kind of talk more about that later.
Absolutely. Jeff?
Hey, yeah, thank you. Jeff Marietta, born and raised in Hibbing, Minnesota, Bob Dylan's hometown. Spent about 8 years out west, ended up in teaching high school special education and coaching baseball. Met my beautiful wife, Sky, who is from Eastern Kentucky. And that's how I ended up here. But we spent some time in Boston, 11 years, educating ourselves. I started a software company. We moved back here in 2015. I took over as the executive director at Pine Mountain Settlement School, one of the most beautiful places in the world. My oldest son is named Harlan, in tribute to Pine Mountain. And we started investing in Main Street, Eastern Kentucky. So sold all my retirement, everything, college funds, everything, and invested in here, right here. Dead serious.
Yeah, we're in one of your places right now, right?
Here we are, yep. So this is Second to Main. This was our first building that we renovated. There's Airbnb apartments upstairs, mostly a wedding venue. We have a coffee shop in Harlan, a cafe in Williamsburg, and a brewery in Harlan as well, Harlan County Beer Company. And then my official role, I guess, that I get health insurance through.
I know how that goes.
Is the chief, I got to represent the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky. I'm the chief impact officer there, brand new role, but I oversee all their impact investment initiatives, which includes Invest 606, which is a business accelerator and pitch competition for Eastern Kentucky. And I also direct the Appalachian Impact Fund, which is a social impact investment fund. And we are just about to launch a Southeast Kentucky Angel Fund.
Hello again, everybody. Sabrina McCorder. I'm a native of Eastern Kentucky, a past entrepreneur, really discovered a passion through owning my business that I love the business world and really supporting other businesses, which is kind of how I came to SOAR. So now I serve as the Director of Business and Innovation. I have a fantastic team that are out in the crowd, and really we focus on helping small startups and entrepreneurs grow and scale their businesses. We're the Eastern Kentucky hub for Kentucky innovation. Live in Eastern Kentucky, will probably die in Eastern Kentucky through and through for sure, but just really excited to be here among some amazing panelists and really learn some things and also give Eastern Kentucky another stage to stand on, because there's a lot of really incredible things happening here.
JP?
Yeah, my name is JP Blevins. I grew up in a little bitty town called Edmonton, Kentucky, Metcalf County. So if you look at the SOAR map, probably like the westernmost county, that's a part of the Appalachian region. You know, my story is a little bit different from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I kind of grew up just in a huge sports family. Sports was my first love, playing basketball. I remember I had competed against Lincoln back in the like UK basketball camp days, back when we were probably like fifth grade. I crushed Lincoln back in the day. No, I'm just kidding. When you get out of college, I was fortunate enough to live out a dream of playing ball at UK, and then, you know, you get done and you're like, now what? You know, my whole identity has been kind of built up in this sports thing and still have some big dreams. What am I going to do now? And so, you know, you go to the legal pad and you start writing down your goals again, and you're like, oh man, I got some big ones. How am I going to do that? And when I looked at my financial goals, I was like, man, there's only a few ways to get to where I want to go. I can own a business or start a business. I don't really see myself doing that at 23. You know, I guess I could work my way up through the top of an organization or be John Calipari one day or make it to the C-suite somewhere. And I didn't really see myself doing that at 23. But there was this thing called investing that just really, really was fascinating to me. The fact that I didn't have to create the idea. I could go find people who had geniuses for building businesses and put my equity in with theirs and grow net worth that way of people that I believed in and concepts that I believed in. So in my 20s, I fell in love with the market. I thought I was going to just trade full time. I still trade today. It's been a passion of mine for 20 years. But I just became a real sponge, just reading and listening to everything in finance I could get my hands on. So at 28, I made the big decision to leave Kentucky to follow what I think is one of the top three entrepreneurs that have come out of Kentucky. In my opinion, a guy named Chip Mahan, who was starting a bank in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I had to make an uncomfortable decision to leave everything that I knew to go be a part of that bank, because I actually believed in him. So I was able to be kind of a seed investor there. That bank took off, is now publicly traded. It's the largest SBA lender in the country. We spun off a software company that we were able to seed in 2011. That company's called Encino. That company went public in 2020. So you know, I became through the bank chief revenue officer. I did join through the ranks of that. So it's been a fascinating journey. A lot of grace along the way, right time, right people, right place. I've worked hard, taken risks, but also I would be foolish not to recognize those things. But I really bet on the right people. I got around people playing the game at a high level, I think is one thing I did really well. Happy to dive into that more.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that throughout this conversation. But the first part of the conversation I really want to dive into, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, is talking about the different roles that the different types of entrepreneurship play in this state. So, you know, when we think about entrepreneurship, you might think of running a small business, or you might think of something like a huge moonshot business idea where you're trying to go out, raise venture capital, go after or disrupt a market. And both are vital to the economy of this state. And so I want to call that out, and I want to talk about the differences of them and the differences of supporting those different types of entrepreneurs. And so to kick it off, Jeff, I want to pick your brain on this first, just around small business. Let's just talk about the dynamics of small business entrepreneurship, and then we're going to compare and contrast that to high growth startup business entrepreneurship. So from your experience starting small businesses, you know, you mentioned being involved with a brewing company. Talk about some of the ways that differentiates from your traditional high growth startup. I'm thinking things like the localized market, creating a community for the people that you're serving, the financing options that are available, things like that.
Okay. I feel very blessed. I think that, you know, small business, you're serving your community. You know, that that's who your customer is to begin with. Okay. Because if you don't, then you're out of business. Right? Immediately. You don't have demand for customer, you know, it's a non-starter. And we see a lot of businesses that start and go in a community and they're not serving any in their community and they stop. High growth, you don't have to serve your community. You can just go out there and throw a bullshit idea out there and try to convince people to invest in it, and maybe you keep it rolling and put in the grind and everything and get it going far enough, you know, that you can get that ball rolling. I think both of them, the similarities, what's that? Yeah. Well, I mean, and I've been fortunate to do both. And I think everyone sitting here has. And I think that it's both of them are a grind. That's where the similarities is. It's day in, day out. You have no weekends. You don't own your life. You know, your phone's going to ring. And if you want it to be successful, you're going to have to pick it up. And so I think the similarity is you have to persevere and do it. I think to me it really comes down to market demand, you know. And like one of Mark Andreessen, who is a famous investor, Andreessen Horowitz, you know, he says, you know, what's most important? And I'll just pose this question out there to people: what's most important, the team, the product, or the market? So I'm just going to leave that out to everybody. And if you read Mark Andreessen's blog that he's stopped doing, so it'd be like 10 years ago, you'd have to read this particular blog. But that question to me is the most important question that you have to ask yourself if you're starting. And like, you know, like what Lincoln's saying, like his the small business that then evolved into a high growth. So that's the other thing I love. I'm just going to say this one other thing. Like my idea right now is I'm going to write a book called Built Not to Scale. And because I think so much of our society, you know, during our easy money days was about just fueling growth, scale, 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 scale. And yeah, that's great when there's 0% interest rates. But when capital has a cost, guess what? Starting a restaurant or an event space in real estate, you know, in a small town that's growing is a better investment. And I've listened to your podcast about App Harvest. And I'm just want to bring them up because I think we shouldn't use that as a case study and we shouldn't avoid talking about it.
Yeah, well, we actually have a point to talk about it. From the perspective you're talking about, you're bringing up a lot of great points around the interest rate environment, how that plays into our economy, and understanding the differences in, you know, the types of entrepreneurship you're going to find under different types of interest rates and things like that. Sabrina, I'm actually going to ask you a question next, unless you have a question you want to.
No, let's. Well, let's. I'd love to hear what you guys think.
All right,
well,
audience participation.
Yeah. Well, that's important. What I want to hear. I want to hear what you guys think.
Oh, this is a great blog. This is the best one ever written. Anyway, we'll just leave everyone on a cliffhanger.
Yes, maybe we should, and we should come back to it at the end.
We'll come back to it.
What a tease you are for everyone. Tease. Everyone would put it last, I bet, if they had to guess.
Yeah, I think they would too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll revisit that one at the end, see if we can get an answer to it. Yeah.
Jeff will give you a free night at his Airbnb if anyone who gets it right. Right up there. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Sabrina, I want to direct this next one to you as it relates to how you all support entrepreneurs through SOAR. So when it comes to supporting entrepreneurs, I think something that we really need to do a good job of understanding from whether it's the organizations that support entrepreneurs or whether it's from the community itself that's supporting entrepreneurs is there are differences between these different types of businesses that we're talking about. And so when you have an entrepreneur come to you and they're saying, you know, I've got this business idea, just talk through some of the ways that SOAR is supporting them. And then I want to dive into some of those different, you know, resources you provide.
Sure. So entrepreneurship definitely looks slightly different in Eastern Kentucky compared to some other regions. You know, we're very blessed to be able to serve entrepreneurs at all levels. So they come through the door. We have a great process where we field them, talk through, you know, what's their strategic plan? Do they have a strategic plan? Are they just throwing spaghetti at the wall and trying to get an idea concept? So really from ground level, I have an idea, help me get it down on paper, all the way through, hey, I've got a really great business model. I need help, you know, finding capital. I need help with the pitch competition. We do a little bit of everything. So we are really capable of helping connect a lot of different resources as well. So Kentucky's full of resources, the SBDC, Mountain Association, SCED, there's all these different organizations, the foundation, lots of opportunities. And so something that we really try to strive to support entrepreneurs with is helping them navigate all of those waters. It can be really confusing, sometimes overwhelming. And, you know, we were all entrepreneurs up here. Sometimes it's helpful to just have someone supporting you along the way, holding your hand along the way, to pick a different word. But, you know, that's one thing. So SOAR, for those of you who don't know, SOAR serves as the Eastern Kentucky hub for Kentucky innovation. And if you were in our workshop earlier, you heard all about the great resources that Kentucky Innovation has through the Cabinet for Economic Development. There's a lot out there, and I'll just kind of repeat what I said to them. There's a lot of amazing resources out there, and entrepreneurs are entitled to every single one of them, not all of these organizations. We're not competitive. We're here to support entrepreneurs. And so at the end of the day, helping them navigate those waters and figure out what works best for them, what can actually help them to the next step, or, you know, sometimes having that hard conversation of like, hey, you know, that's a really great dream. How are you going to fund it? You know, let's slow down a little bit. I always say, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And we talk about that a lot with our entrepreneurs. So it looks very different, but it's also thriving, which is a really cool thing. And Jeff can attest to that as well.
So. Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about different resources needed for different types of ventures. And one of the main resources that everyone loves to talk about, rightfully so, is funding. And the different types of funding and the different methods of funding a new idea, whether it's through equity fundraising or whether it's through debt financing. And JP, you know, you not only did you get to be part of a company that kind of had that high growth rise, but you also were serving a lot of small businesses with financing. So when it comes to the different mechanisms for funding a business idea, talk about your experience in seeing, you know, financing happen for small businesses versus the venture capital kind of coming into the picture as well, since you've got both perspectives on that.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So yeah, I have had the opportunity. So Live Oak Bank, that I went there when there were 10 people, today has 1,200, and it's become the nation's largest small business lender, utilizing a product called the SBA product, a Small Business Administration product. And so we today will lend $4 billion across the country to small businesses. So, you know, funding is interesting because you talk about the difference that Jeff was talking about, having a profitable small business versus a vision startup, high growth, unprofitable. You know, basically what we're looking at, whether we are going to finance a small business, is it's all about cash flow. You know, startups are really, really hard, whether you're talking high growth or small business. But most of our lending from the bank comes from being able to analyze a profit and loss statement and saying, hey, look, if they want to go and scale or go buy a new building to expand or go buy a new business, does the cash flow support the new debt? And is the debt service enough that we feel comfortable if something goes bump in the night, they can still make their payments and make a good living? So I have a long history of doing that. And it's funny that you mention, I like stories that start off as profitable stories that turn into high growth. So Live Oak raised $10 million to start the bank, but that was profitable from day one. You know, you're, as long as you're making good loans, you're making money. What happened in the early days, and this leads to your venture question, is so Live Oak started a bank with a different concept. We're going to lend to niche small businesses across the country without branches. So 15 years ago, everybody thought the only way you can grow a bank is just go add branches. So we kind of flipped that on its head and said, you know what, in 15 years, nobody's going to walk into a branch. Everybody's just going to have their phone out doing all their banking from their phone. And that's the genius of Chip Mahan, who I went into business with, who could have the foresight to see that. So our return on equity, return on assets, very early when we started the bank was really attractive. And so other presidents and other CEOs would come ask the bank, you know, how are you guys being this efficient, right? You're lending money across the country with this pain in the butt SBA loan, but you're doing it efficiently. How have you done it? So we said, well, look, we've built a software to go run the bank, you know, cloud storage, transparency, workflow. And they said, well, can we get a look at that, right? Or can we license it? And would you let us buy a piece? So after a few of those questions of running the bank, they realized they had a completely separate company, a software company that would be a software as a service model to financial institutions. So we spun that off. And it's really funny because I remember raising money for nCino and having some of those seed round investments, because now we're switching the deal. We're on an idea, right, that hasn't made a dime yet. And we're going to sell the idea. And I'll never forget, there was just a blue-collar farmer in town they had invited to the investment meeting. And obviously, he wouldn't have been invited unless he had done really well in the farming business. But he had overalls on, and he was probably a guy that just every day ran a small business. And, you know, it's, are we making money? Are we not? We cut costs. We, you know. And the guy that was running the software company gets up and puts the projections on the board. And after like 15 minutes, the farmer says, I don't understand. Help me understand this. When are you going to start making money? And he's looking down, and it's like red, 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 red. And he's like, the CEO of nCino says, it's not our plan. You know, we're going to try to go double, double, triple with revenue. This thing is valued on multiple of revenue and growth. So, but I could tell someone that came from a traditional, I got to manage a small business and run a profit. He couldn't flip it to, I don't understand anyone that's talking about raising money and you can't show me a profit on paper. But they're two very different things.
And I think that's such an important dynamic to understand. Also, not only to understand it, but to understand how the interest rate environment, which is just, it's going to be a topic of conversation within this discussion, I can already tell, but it plays into that as well. You know, we saw just a super hot venture capital market throughout like 2020, 2021. Now it's cooled off. It's much harder to raise capital. And now it's, yeah, we're very much more focused on, are you at least producing revenue? Hopefully you're profitable. You've got a profitable business there. And I think that also plays a huge part into risk and the risk profile of a small business, where we're focused on the fundamentals. We're focused on making this a profitable venture and evaluating how that risk plays into the community that you're building that business into, having that community support, you know, knowing that, yes, it might be a risk to start a business, but if you're going after kind of this from the ground up, building a profitable business, it's a lot less of a risk than AppHarvest, like we're going to end up talking about later on. But the other part of this discussion, it was funny that Jeff brought it up in the way that he did, talking about what's most important, the market, the team, the product. Yeah, that blanked on for a second. Yeah. One of the things I really want to dig into is team, because one of the topics of discussion that I kind of fleshed out here thinking through this discussion was, you know, it's great to think about how can Kentucky really become competitive from a high growth startup perspective. I think we're already there with small businesses. We have people who want to work here. How can we make sure that we're growing the talent here and giving them the skills that they need so that when one day we have more opportunities to become a place for high growth startups, we have the people here in place to be able to do that. So Lincoln, I want to start with you. You've just been a part of a lot of great teams. So let's kind of talk about the dynamics of, where do great teams come from? What are the skills that you notice when you're working with a great team? How can we cultivate that here in this state?
Well, back to that point, Jim Collins, if you all have heard of his book, Good to Great, Great by Choice, he's written a few bestsellers. He's a professor at Stanford, and a few years ago, I think a decade ago, he pulled together 9 researchers and said, we're going to study the best companies over 20-year periods, not the companies you might hear about who have a big blip overnight, but we're going to look at what makes them great over 20 years, these companies. And the key outcome, there's probably 3 or 4, but number one was it's always who before what. So you might have a great idea, or you might be excited about something, but you always invest in the who before the what. And I've learned that's true in my own life. And even now when I make investments or I look at the ones I've made that have done well, it wasn't the idea. It was the person, it was a leadership team, because you kind of figure it out. And, you know, Chip, for example, I remember JP telling me when he made that big leap, you know, he just wanted to work with Chip because he knew that Chip was going to figure it out. It wasn't probably the idea or what they pitched you on. You went to North Carolina, right? You're like, this guy's a winner. He's going to find a way to win, and winners win. And I remember my first company, which I didn't know what I was doing. I was 23. I just gone to a big fancy business school, thought I knew what I was doing, and I definitely didn't. And I tried to start in Lexington. And I think it plays back into this. You know, Lexington 20 years ago was different than it is now, and there wasn't an entrepreneurial community then. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I wasn't in an environment that could tell me you didn't really know. And, you know, I got way ahead of my skis, and, you know, that was a hard lesson for me, because since then I've had a lot more success. But I put myself in a place to succeed with people who are also complimented my weaknesses, and together we made a much stronger team. And, you know, Lexington now has what Awesome Inc. has done, and Brian Rainey and Luke have built there has really made a huge difference there, right? And built an ecosystem. And now I met with Wes Murray and Becca Self, and they're building something else in Lexington that has a chance to help build the ecosystem. And it makes such a difference for an entrepreneur, because starting a business sucks. The first year, I don't care what anyone's story they tell you, because people tell you in hindsight the highlight reel of what went well and this great idea. But the first year for everyone, I think Elon Musk says it's like staring into the abyss for just a year, right? Just to get it off the ground, to get enough energy. JP and I were just talking about that. And you need someone who's willing to just eat glass for that first year and find a way forward, no matter what. And they are obsessed with it. And usually, if you've got someone who's got that will and the resolve, and it's personal to them, it's not just like a deal, right? Like another, I got a great idea, I'm going to go make a lot of money. Those flame out all the time. But when someone has a personal story tied to it, you just find a way. And, you know, and I think about it now, this is a good example, as I mentioned, we're building a company called KidStrong, and my best friend started it. He's from Breathitt County, and he started with $12,000. And in that first year, I remember going to him, and I was like, Matt, you're my best friend. Are you sure about this? You know, we got like 60 members in 1,200 square feet. We're making like $9,000 a month. You know, this isn't going to work. And he just believed. He's like, it's personal, man. Like, I just know that my daughter needs something better than exists for kids walking through 8, right? And I remember that moment, I was like, all right, I'm in. I'll do it with you because I believe in you, right? At the time, I didn't see the vision. I don't even think he had the vision. But now we're the largest early childhood development program in the country. But we had to get through the first year where it didn't make any sense because he believed so much. And it was in a great market where kids need help at that age, and there wasn't a really great resource for it. And we've attracted a team now that is second to none in that space. And we've had over 100,000 members from a year that we had 70 members, right? You just got to get through that and then not worry. You know, you need to have a big vision, but you really got to nail 3 months at a time. When you're a little company, like, you should not be thinking past the 3 months, because if you get lost in the clouds of your big vision and pictures of yourself and vision boards on Fortune magazine, that ain't going to happen. But what can happen is you can succeed 3 months at a time, and then you attract the people that you kind of talk about. And one of our challenges, and this was one of our big decisions, and I hated it. I remember it was one of those times where we disagreed, was he's like, it's just, I don't think we can succeed in Lexington. Like, people here just don't get it, you know? And he made the decision on his own to move his family, pick up on a business, just a dream, move to Dallas. And there's such a robust, you know, environment there to help. And it's really helped propel us forward. So while we started in Lexington, we maybe couldn't reach our potential there. And I think it's not just the people, it's the community, right? Like, you've got your people, and, you know, you meet people sometimes, you're like, I want to be involved with them. I just want to invest. I remember I met, you know, JP again. I'd met him before, but saw him probably 6 months ago, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, whatever he does, I'd love to support him because he's going to find a way, right? But you don't find many people like that. And you got to find a community that embraces you, that wants to lift you up and really help you be successful, right? And you can pull talent from, because talent's attracted to a strong community, right? If people, they want to be where their A players are. And that's just kind of the way life works in anything you're doing. So I think it's not just the team, and it's always who before what, but it's the culture and the environment you create. And I don't know if it's the right time now, maybe later. Like, Eastern Kentucky has an unfair advantage if they want to take advantage of that advantage they have, to really build that robust ecosystem here, because of some trends that are happening post-COVID, where the brilliant software engineer making $300,000 in New York doesn't want to live in a 700-square-foot apartment because it costs $1 million to buy a place in New York City that's 700 square feet. But for a third of that, you can buy a dream home here, have some land, if the community's there, right? You got to have the basics like Wi-Fi and infrastructure, but there aren't many places in the country that can really, really take advantage of that like this community can. And it's one of the reasons I'm so bullish, maybe not over the next 3 to 5 years on this part of the state of Kentucky, but over the next 10 to 20. I mean, it's just an amazing bet. But it needs the people here.
I could not agree more with that. Yeah, I would love for you to add on to that.
You're definitely hit on something there. We have a program that we've worked on at SOAR called Make My Move. It's in partnership with Make My Move. If you were at the earlier session, you probably heard them talk, but that's something that we've really leveraged. So we're trying to build that ecosystem. A lot of times, you know, you've got a lot of rural communities, and community is very important, but you also need good mentorship, good network, good resources. So through the Make My Move program, we've had, Latasha, 4 official movers, I believe. Yeah. Yeah, over 1,300 applications to move to Eastern Kentucky for specific counties. They are not taking from our resources. They are bringing their own resources. We actually have a pretty hefty, like, they have to make a certain amount of money to move here. It's even a bonus if their, you know, husband, wife, whatever, you know, also moves along with them. And so we are hopeful that's pretty fresh. We're really hopeful that we're going to start seeing some impact from that, being able to actually pull them in to mentorship, potentially investment and things like that as well. But it's going to be really cool to have big players from other regions come in and to give some advice and to some thoughts and things like that. But even more so, it's going to be really cool to see them move here and then learn from Appalachia and the culture that we have here and see how those can kind of commingle and coexist. It'll
how
be
they can grow together. Add to that, there's a great example. There's many, but like Austin, Texas. Go back in the 1980s. Everyone thinks of Austin as this tech hub now. It was not. It was not that different from the environment that we have here in kind of Eastern Kentucky more broadly. There wasn't any tech infrastructure. But 2 companies moved there. I remember one was Trilogy and one other, and they had hundreds of software engineers who moved with them. Then those people became Acorns. They became, you know, built oak trees of their own. And now from that has this burgeoning tech community, and it took 20 to 30 years to build it. But you got to start somewhere. You got to have the environment to attract people, and what you're talking about, Sabrina, and Make My Move, you know, Ben and his team have done a great job. Met with them a few times, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the program they have there has proven this out. They've moved 3,000 people. Average person makes 110,000. Well, they don't just come and take their 110,000 that they're earning from a Facebook or a large kind of tech company and Amazon. They bring it there and those tax dollars there, but they bring their families there and their friends come to visit. Like, oh my gosh, like, I'd love to live here. This is such a gem. I didn't know about it, you know? And that's the kind of opportunity that, you know, you got here. So I'm so glad y'all are seeing that through.
Well, and
you
also
got to make that 400.
Yeah, and it also goes back to storytelling. So, you know, when you say, yeah, you can work from in Eastern Kentucky and work for Facebook, that kind of sounds mythical. But when you have somebody that's actually here and they're doing it and they're telling others about it, that also paves a road to where, you know, when we have things like Code Kentucky or Awesome Inc's Accelerator and things like that, it also changes and shifts that narrative so people do understand, like, I can live where I love to live in this beautiful, amazing Eastern Kentucky that we're all fortunate to live in, and also, you know, have a really good paying job and support my family and invest in my community, which, you know, I think Jeff and I can both attest to this. The businesses that we work with, they're selfless in a lot of ways because they really they care about their communities, and they truly are hoping to make a change, not just for themselves, but also for future generations, and specifically, generally, their kids. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is a great part of the conversation and just such a huge component of trying to get our state to this kind of next level as it relates to startups and how we think about high-growth entrepreneurship. And just a personal antidote to let everyone know that it's working is myself. You know, Lincoln mentioned Awesome Inc. Being a huge role in the ecosystem. I'm a direct result of Awesome Inc. pulling me into the startup ecosystem when I was in college. I got to know Brian Rainey really well. I then helped start this podcast, which is the reason I'm here. We interviewed an entrepreneur on the podcast that was starting a company in Lexington, a software company. I joined as the fifth employee in Lexington, Kentucky, right in downtown. We now have 25 employees building in Lexington. And so I say that just to say, like, it's going to be a slow progress. It's going to be a slow process. And there's not going to be like a silver bullet that's like, yes, if we solve this part of it, then everything kind of comes and is solved. It's going to be something that is a bunch of different things coming together. And the community part is a huge part of it. Having people that get involved early and at a young age and kind of are immersed in this culture of it is a huge part of it. And everything that's being set up here pours into one big pot. And to Lincoln's point about saying, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, it's not going to be a huge jump forward, but 10 to 20, that's a much longer time horizon. That's a much larger opportunity for this state and for Lexington, for this part of the state as well. All right, so moving on kind of from talking about cultivating this talent here and the team and the differences between small business entrepreneurship and high growth startup entrepreneurship. One of the other things that I wanted to direct this conversation to, just because I feel like there's a lot of people in Kentucky that have questions about it, is the App Harvest story. And, you know, I feel like there for a while, it was a lot of people singing their praises, rightfully so. They were doing big things. They'd raise big money. They'd put up these awesome facilities. And it was all praises being sang. And then very quickly, bad press started coming out. And it was all down on App Harvest from that. I want to talk about it from a realist perspective. And, like, first off, let's talk about what actually went on, why it went on, and how that changes the appetite for those types of ventures in this state. So, Jeff, you seem like you had some thoughts on it right off the bat here. So the first question I want to ask you is, like, is this something that Kentuckians should look at as, like, this can't happen in Kentucky, or was it a much broader way this company was structured? Is kind of where I want to frame this.
Well, I mean,
first.
I think the thing is that we all need to realize this happens all the time.
Exactly.
All the time. I mean, in venture capital, and JP probably can talk more about this than I can, but I think the issue is that the stakes are much higher in Eastern Kentucky. Oh, and, you know, I thought someone was going to be like, no. but I think, you know, in the venture capital and in this world, failure, you know, you look, failure is common. You know, in fact, it's expected. With every so many of failures, you have a home run, you know, or a success. And so I think the issue, you know, we can get, if you want to get down into the, like, dirty details of the company and what was done wrong or what was done right, go read the Yahoo Finance message board and enjoy yourself. Seriously. I mean, it's great. There's a guy on there. He spells it all out. You know, it was great entertainment for a long time. But I think that we just need to recognize that and I would love to hear JP's comments on this because, you know, he's in that more world than I am. But, you know, in the VC world, it's, you know, 100 investments and 3 are going to be / home run grand slams. 10 are going to be, and I'm going to be off on my math here, 10 are going to be maybe break even, maybe okay, and another 10 maybe break even, and then the rest are gonna just fail. And I just think the problem that I see is not App Harvest, but the promises and the fanfare and the ribbon cutting and all of the crap that happens before the company even starts to make revenue. You know, you can't go as an entrepreneur and make hundreds of promises pre-revenue. You don't. That's not something you do. Unless you're trying, I mean, I don't know. There's maybe certain circumstances where you might do that, but you can't go into an impoverished, persistently poor, impoverished region of Eastern Kentucky and make a bunch of promises about how you're going to employ all these people and do all these things pre-revenue. You don't do that, and we've seen it. Let's talk about, you know, let's not talk about App Harvest. Let's talk about Brady. Let's talk about Brady. I mean, I invested them just so I could join the class action lawsuit.
Yeah. So the thing I will say about what happened at App Harvest and them coming in and kind of making promises, and then I want to hear JP's perspective too. My take on them coming in and making a bunch of big promises is this: they had to raise a ton of capital to do what they wanted to do. They had a big dream. I can't fault a big dream. They had to raise a ton of capital to make that big dream happen. I don't want to fault that either. Where I think things started going wrong is when you look at the business model of selling a commodity item. They tried to pitch that, okay, we're going to operate like a tech company, when in reality, you're going to be able to have the same margins on a tomato that everybody else was charging on selling a tomato. And then you go out and try and raise venture capital on a company that's making those types of margins, whereas venture capital is much more suitable for a software company or a very high margin company. And then we see where the disaster can kind of unfold from there. They just were so capital intensive and then went on top of that and did the SPAC.
But I mean, my point is that happens markets. All the time.
The and failure, yes.
No, that what you're saying. They raise the capital, raise the capital, raise the capital. You got to raise the capital to do the thing. And that happened a lot more because we had interest rates that were so low and
exactly.
money was so cheap.
Yes.
So I my point is just that we can, you know, really try to pick apart App Harvest, but it's a symptom of a larger problem exactly. that we have in the United States
yes.
of free, easy money being invested in things that are very risky, but also potentially very, very profitable.
Yes. JP, I want to pass it over to you off that point just around... you can take it from the point of this interest rate environment and everything that it enabled, but also from the...
And we need to hear your opinions on App Harvest.
So let me start with App Harvest to your first question. It would be really unfortunate if people looked at App Harvest and that was a deterrent to not go try to do something in the state of Kentucky. Jeff is exactly right. These things do happen. And whether you want to pick and prod into the App Harvest story, I'm probably not the guy to do that. However... You know, being lending money to small businesses and being part of a lot of investments, I do know that is part of the deal. And if you've got thin skin and risk averse, this might not be the world for you. With that said, I do think it's interesting as a little bit of a test case, because I think the same thing can happen in Eastern Kentucky and in Kentucky that I saw happen in Wilmington, North Carolina. So I'd just like to share a little bit. So I went to Wilmington, North Carolina, and I was 28 years old. Wilmington is a sleepy little town on the coast, 100,000 people, probably a third the size of Lexington. And in the 80s and 90s, the textile industry was really big there, just like the coal industry used to be here. The textile industry got decimated, and all those jobs went overseas. And so when I got to Wilmington, North Carolina, all the opportunity was in Raleigh and Charlotte. Like, if you were in Wilmington, North Carolina, you either had to be a professional, a CPA, attorney, a doctor, and there was like one pharmaceutical company, so there was no opportunities. So the best and the brightest had to leave, and you certainly couldn't attract new talent. And then these two startup companies that I just described earlier happen. And literally what's happened to that town, it's been transformed over 10 years. You've had two startup companies, one that now employs 1,200 that is publicly traded, one that employs 4,000 that's publicly traded. But what's happened is all that wealth has stayed in that region and then reinvested in the region. And then what's also happened is people that were a part of those companies that learned how to be entrepreneurs from having a front row seat to watching those companies grow have broken out and starting their own. And now the cycle is off and booming and it's become a hub. Never in a million years when they started the software company did they say, we can be successful here. You gotta be in Silicon Valley. You at least gotta be in Atlanta where there's a direct flight to everywhere, or you better be in New York. It turned out of, yeah, maybe it was a little harder to recruit people early. So I think about that here, right? And moving back to Lexington, you know, I've been asked, like, what do you see here? And Lexington's way better than when I moved away. But I still think we need a few of those big winners to hit and for that wealth to stay in the region and for people to know that not only can our best and brightest stay here, but you can attract people here. And you got to have a few breaks to go that way. But I've seen it. So in my mind, it's very possible. And I think in terms of everything in my life that I've accomplished, I've really thought about in decades, right? It's about 10 years. I mean, the biggest accomplishment of my life took 10 years. The second biggest of my life took 10 years. So I don't think this should be any different for Eastern Kentucky. I do think what you mentioned about Awesome Inc. is really important, because You know, I grew up in a county that is part of the SOAR region. I didn't grow up in an entrepreneurial family. I didn't grow up around friends who had fathers that were entrepreneurs. All I knew is I was hungry to learn. So I had to kind of go figure it out, and you can go figure it out as a self-starter, but Awesome Inc. started giving exposure to entrepreneurs in Kentucky. When I came back to Lexington, I was like, what are they about? They created the Kentucky Entrepreneur Hall of Fame. So whatever from a policy standpoint or a curriculum standpoint we can do to start people in the region early of getting them interested in business or getting curriculum in their hands, where it's one thing for me to hear the Elon Musk story and the job story and the game. They revolutionized the world. They're incredible. They're geniuses. But it's so far away from me. I can't really. But what I can relate to is when I pick up the book and read about the Kentucky entrepreneurs that were born in the same places I was born in, that had the same background, that didn't have a lot of money, that figured it out. I mean, I would eat that up all day long. Like stories like your dad. Like, I mean, that's a Corbin story. Took a franchise international, right? Everyone should know that story. I wish I knew that story when I was in eighth grade, right? You should know of the things that you're doing, right? The people from Kentucky that obviously are starting things that isn't just about making a buck, but actually about things that stir their heart. And they just want to go do good. And the monetary and the economics are a byproduct of first leading with their heart. Like, give me those stories. Let me read about that, right? Because I can relate to that. So hats off to SOAR, to Awesome Inc., all the hubs that are given exposure to the entrepreneurs and the stories in Kentucky, because to me, that is what inspires me. That gives me hope. If people can do it from here, I can too. And if people can do it there, I think people in Eastern Kentucky can believe that too.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, give a round of applause for that. I was preaching.
Yeah, I got on a soapbox. Sorry, I got fired up.
No, and as we wrap this up.
Just one question.
Yeah, please.
Wouldn't you say the same way that what they built with Live Oak and Encino, like it was one company that changed Wilmington forever, right?
That's right.
And when I understand AppHarvest, if you break it down, I actually don't know it well enough to have a solid opinion, but I'd love to have five AppHarvest chances, right? And just hope one of them breaks through, right? Yeah. For Eastern Kentucky, because it changes Eastern Kentucky forever. And it's a surefire way that worked in Austin, Texas, that worked in Boise, Idaho, that worked in Chattanooga, where there's literally a company that went there that got the full support from everyone in that community, and they broke through. And there's probably a bunch of failures you don't know about, but it just takes one. And I don't think it's that different here.
And can I just jump off that? Yeah. Because right here in Corbin, Tolden Troll, who's familiar? Okay, American Greeting Card building. It's a million square feet building that American Greeting Card had. Close it down. Guy came in, he was a master at selling Magic the Gathering cards. Started a company, was the first online selling company of those types of cards. Built it into an amazing company. They're doing $50, $60, $70 million a year in revenue. Spun off a bunch of entrepreneurs who then opened up the Pinball Museum, our Amazon resellers. Like, part of the success of Corbin that people don't talk about, that's a secret underneath, is Tolden Troll and this one entrepreneur who came here, started an online business in the early 2000s selling those Magic the Gathering cards. And I was talking to someone tonight, and I'm gonna get it all wrong, and I won't say who, but someone's like, yeah, he just sold Post Malone an $800,000 Magic the Gathering card. It's the only one that exists in the world. And he had it right here in Corbin and sold it online. And those guys are buddies now. But in the Wrigley, our space here, you know, Austin City, all of those restaurants, obviously it's anecdotal, but there's disposable income, higher paying jobs, you know. And that's a person who started a place that employed 40, 50 people, you know? So I think we see it happening, and I love that point.
Well, I think a great way to kind of bring everything together of all the different points that have been made through this kind of last section of this and trying to talk about the dynamics of small business entrepreneurship, high growth startup entrepreneurship, is it's all compounding. You know, when you have somebody that, like the example you're talking about, starts off as a small business, but then the compounding effects of that of, oh my gosh, we can spin this into another thing. And then that turns into another thing. And it's exposing people to how businesses work. And that is, for me, I'm very early in my journey, but I started a small drone business when I was a kid. It just taught me how to run a little business. And then that gave me something to talk about to Awesome Inc. So when I went to Brian Rainey and I was like, I've got this little drone business. I want to be an entrepreneur. He was like, come on in, buddy. We're where you need to be. And, you know, and then I got exposed to everybody else and now I'm involved in a startup and we'll see where it goes from there. But when you think of, okay, how are these two things related? Small businesses lead into the bigger and bigger and bigger bets. And I think that's what we need to realize as a state is like, there's not necessarily one that's better than the other. Yeah, it's more exciting to think about the big shots and like the app harvest shots and everything. But we need to take each entrepreneur just as seriously and support them just as much either way. And so that's really what I wanted to tease out of this entire conversation. I think that's what we ended up doing. So from my perspective, I'm very optimistic about everything we see here. I'm very optimistic about the people we have sitting up on this panel and everything that they've said tonight. And just to give a little bit more context before wrapping up here, the podcast that we do that I'm sitting up here facilitating, Middle Tech, we interview entrepreneurs that have been building in this region. The stories I've gotten to hear are incredible. And I have no plans of stopping doing that and telling stories like this. So, you know, my message to the audience from here is just go out and look for those people who are doing the incredible things because they're here. You just have to kind of go out and listen to a podcast or go and talk to Awesome Inc. or any of those sorts of things. That's my shameless plug. But anyway, thank you guys for coming here and listening to this. I do want to give a chance for anybody that wants to ask any questions to any of our panelists about any of the topics that were discussed, or if you just have a question about their backgrounds, I'm sure they'd be happy to answer those as well. Yes, over there. Feel free to stand up and speak. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's tough. You know, I feel you. There's not the ecosystem. There's not the sophistication. It's just not here in Eastern Kentucky. And so, you know, you're a zebra, you know, and that's just different, right? And so the banks here, all of the financing that's available is very risk averse, very. And so we actually were just about to launch a Southeast Kentucky Angel Fund. Colby might announce it tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see. Hal's got to be there. But, you know, I think that's a missing piece that is a big gap, a big hole in the sort of capital stack of Eastern Kentucky, is that higher risk, you know, kind of capital that just doesn't exist. And I don't know, I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I guess yeah. I'm trying to do what I can do, but.
I've got a quick perspective on that just from a couple of different angles. One is, so Kentucky Innovation is one of our supporters of our podcast. They have a bunch of programs that are aimed at combating that. One of them being the Angel Tax Credit, being able to provide tax credits back to angel investors that are investing in Kentucky companies. There are definitely efforts being focused on that specifically, but you know, the perspective I would want to convey to you. So I've mentioned the startup company I'm with for a while. We just completed a Series A fundraise earlier this year. Our founder, I think, talked to 137 different venture capitalists before actually getting a yes. And on top of that, it was somebody out of LA. So yeah, we talked to a lot of people in Kentucky, but like, don't limit yourself to trying to raise money in Kentucky, because it's like he's saying, the venture ecosystem is just not that developed here. So that's much more challenging thing to do. But as an entrepreneur, you're used to taking on challenges. So that would be my advice. We just had someone explode back there. Thank you for the question, though. Did that answer what you're looking for to some extent? Okay. Any other questions? Ice breaking in the terms of it more coming to the state? Yeah, I think it plays back to a lot of what we talked about on this panel, a lot of what JP was saying about like, we need that one kind of thing to hit here. When you think of a startup ecosystem that's more developed than Lexington's, think of like an Indianapolis or like an Asheville. You know, they've mentioned, they have that company that got started there, had a big exit, typically in the billions, and then all of the employees that had equity got paid out, but they also had the experience of starting the company. That is typically what I view as one of the main things that needs to happen to really get the venture ecosystem cranking on all cylinders in this state, because then you have not only the capital flowing around to actually be able to start a fund here, but you also have the experience for entrepreneurs that are going to be able to start fundable businesses that those funds can invest in within this area. So it's a multifaceted thing that is not just kind of one solution is going to solve it. But there are more funds popping up in Kentucky. Awesome Inc. just launched one not too long ago. So there's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of effort being put behind it. But to ultimately solve it and get it to the point we all want to see it get to, you need that exit, in my opinion. All right, everyone, please give our panelists a big round of applause. Thank you guys for attending. Appreciate it.